This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices, united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
Welcome, everybody, to this week's edition of the Ticket City Podcast, brought to you by all of the guys over at orangebloods.com. I'm your, official host, Jeff Ketchum. But we've got five hosts on the show. Anwar Richardson, Alex Dunlap, Jason Sukumel, Dustin McComas, all feeling different emotions as we sit in the middle of spring break. Some of us in new homes, some of us watching basketball and baseball together at the same time in ways they never probably thought possible. Jason, I think, is just doing normal recruiting stuff. Is there anything interesting in your life this week, Jason? No homes to close on?
Nothing too terribly interesting.
Kids are in the house.
Wife. Well, I lived the bachelor life for 4 days. The wife and kids were gone for 4 days, so that was enjoyable. But they came home. I celebrate that they came home last night. So that's sarcasm, of course. But no, nothing too exciting. Another camp this weekend. I'll be in Dallas this weekend covering more recruiting stuff. So.
Now, you're among friends. None of us would judge you. None of the people listening to this podcast would ever hang you out to dry. What's the most single thing that you did, the most bachelor thing of those 4 days that you were able to do anything that you wanted because the entire family wasn't at home? What did you do?
Well, first off, I'm truly not going to be honest with that answer.
thank you.
You know what, honestly, yeah, you're right. I'll reference it off mic earlier. I'll just say that. One of the nights I was in Houston for the opening camp, so that took one night. One night I just went to dinner with a buddy, caught up, had a couple drinks, and we went to a little bar, had some drinks, stayed up. But mostly, man, I just stayed up late, watched movies, just enjoyed some quiet time around the house. Nothing too crazy, man. So,
that one night with hookers and blow at the steak and all that had to have been fantastic.
No, wasn't that rowdy, but it was fun.
Is steak and ale even still a thing? It seems like I haven't seen one of those in forever.
I think the last one I remember seeing closed down on Anderson Lane.
Like Anderson years ago, decades ago.
Yeah, not a decade ago, but like, yeah, 5-6 years ago.
Yeah, decades start to fly by, brother. We'll see. I don't think the steak and ale's been there in a decade.
All right. I remember there being a thread about steak and ale closing down when it closed down.
We can get it figured out.
It looks like there was one that came back in 2016.
Oh.
There's just little thing that, you know, Google searches can provide. Fellas, it's spring break, right? So a week ago, we got everybody teased with this idea of, all right, we're a practice in and we're three practices in, and big picture from one day of pads of a little bit of eyeballing, you know, just trying to get some discussion out that's new that follows the fact that we're in the middle of the beginning of something that's kind of important, spring football. Now that it's spring break and there haven't been practices this week, it has been a strange, it's always strange to me that when you start something for 3 or 4 days and then you take about a 10 day break.
No, I mean, I feel the same way, Ketch. I put up a column up Tuesday, and I was just, it was one of these weeks where it's the real struggle to even think about what to write about or what to kind of, how you can kind of round up information because a ton of people are gone, you know, it's spring break. So, I think that there's still some things to unpack from that first couple of days of practice that we were able to kind of, you know, take in. And, but yeah, I agree with you, man. It's just like anything else. Whenever you kind of start something, you always sort of build on it and move forward through the, you know, you get into the grind and move forward through the process. And under Tom Herman, that's just not how it's gone here. He's like to get a little taste of how the team looks over this first week before spring break, then take that week of spring break off and, you know, come back with a real vengeance afterwards. I think that at least in the last couple of years, it's kind of been to his advantage because as it's been this year, the same way it was last year, mainly in the running back room last year, but you know, there are some guys, you know, banged up that they really need to get back, and that this week off could really, really help coming into next week. These dudes like the, you know, the Keandre Coburns, the on defense, man, at the linebacker position, they got to get healthy. they got to get healthy there. We're one injury away from having to start a guy that isn't even on scholarship at one of the inside linebacker positions. So I think that it came at a good time, but it does sort of throw off our content schedule and how we're going to sort of, you know, roll into this thing. But the good news is starting next week, hopefully, you know, bright and early on Monday, we'll be able to get out to some practices and begin reporting on it again.
Anwar, from inside the building, has there been a sense that the first week was exactly what they wanted it to be, that the team, you know, has kinks to work out and jobs to be won and there are players that have to step up, but all things being equal, it seems like the general vibing is very positive.
So far, so good. I mean, you know, it's from what the people I've talked to, and again, grab them before, you know, they've gone on vacation, kind of want to let guys enjoy their vacations a little bit and not have to deal with, you know, me. But before that, they seem to be really happy. They seem to, you know, it seems to be like seamless. And you know, it's not to say there aren't areas of improvement or clearly areas of concern, some of the things we talked about last week. But overall, them just feeling good about, okay, now the install is going well. Them feeling good about some potential position battles. There's no real trepidation from what I can tell. It just seems to be like everyone's like, okay, cool, we're here. Yancey McKnight, he did his thing with the guys in the offseason. Everyone's in phenomenal shape. Let's just go ahead and get this ball rolling. And everyone, you know, also being happy with the freshmen who are there on campus. What's the number? Do we have like, what, 9 guys on campus right now? No, I forget what that number is, 8 to 9, but feeling like those guys are in great shape and can come in and compete. So overall, I mean, clearly it's early, it's spring, but if you just measure it in those kind of increments, everyone feels pretty good.
It's funny. I just don't know what it's like to cover a program that's just okay with itself.
There's no dysfunction.
I'm not worried about there's not even any real discussion about guys that are going to transfer, which we know there will be. There will be guys that come out of the spring that realize their spot on the depth chart isn't what it would want to be. But if you can remember this time last year, websites that cover the team were saying things like, well, you know, Chris Nelson isn't going to be here in the fall. And it was so we were often put in this weird position where it was like, well, the coaches say that they look at Chris Nelson as a big leader. I think he eventually became a captain. He's injured, so he's not doing anything, but he's in the program. And yeah, like we fully expect him to be on the field. And like even Nelson at one point kind of had to acknowledge like, you know, this weird thing that's been going on. It doesn't feel like that's out there this year that, oh, I'm sure the degenerates on the board will eventually get to a point where there's a, hey, Anwar, name the guys you think are going to transfer thread. But just in general, now that the early, you know, that portal thing from January and December is out of the way, and it doesn't seem like there's been a real story there in a while. It's just business as usual. It's a football team that is like kind of handling its business. And I think they're able to do so maybe for the first time in a long time, kind of off the grid, because when you're not, Jason, having these questions of anxiety constantly, who's your quarterback? What's going to happen with you know what I mean? Like there's, even though they had high turnover amongst its starting positions, certainly on defense, you know, you lose on the offensive line, some pieces that you got to replace. The way they finished the season has allowed for this coaching staff to be receiving a benefit of the doubt that just hasn't existed in a decade. You'd have to go back to 2010, I think, is the last time you had a Texas team with this coming off of a really, really good season with this many question marks, and everybody just assumes they got it.
Isn't it a refreshing change, though, from what we're used to? It's kind of nice to not have to chase around drama or so many concerns or stories or, you know, guys leaving, guys being unhappy, struggles on the field, struggles in the locker room. I certainly don't want to say it's boring, but it's a nice change of pace from, like you said, what we've experienced for the better part of the decade. You know, we're 3 practices in. I'm always the guy says, all right, okay, we're 3 practices in. Let's see what happens over the next, we got, what, about a month left before the spring game. So I'd expect once you know, they get back. Obviously, they're in full pads. They started that the Friday before spring break. You know, things are really going to ramp up once they get back in the swing of things next week. And we won't be covering quarterback depth chart, which has always been the story that's dominated spring camp for us traditionally. But I think you'll have some pretty good other position battles and some of these young guys. And, you know, I've heard Brew McCoy's done some good things already. And, you know, which of the young running backs is going to help possibly step up and take some of the load off of Keontae Ingram. I don't even know if that guy is on campus. Is Jordan Whittington going to be the guy? I think there'll be some interesting storylines to cover. You know, probably not as much drama as we've had in the past, but you know what, from my perspective, and I would think Amar probably would say the same thing, it's a refreshing change of pace to be able to just cover some kind of X's and O's action on the field. But I will be interested to see over the next month, you know, just how this team kind of comes together a little bit in terms of filling some of these holes they have at backup running back, along the defensive line, and really at every level of the defense. So I think there's still a lot of newsworthy things to cover. It'll still hold everybody's interest, but yeah, it just has a different feel than what we've had in the past.
Let me throw this generic question out, and I'd love to get everybody's feedback on this. Anybody who wants to jump in first to answer it, knock themselves out. Of all of the perceived question marks or issues or whatever facing this football team as of, you know, March, what are we, the 21st now, 20th, 21st? Is there one that you think's overblown, that you think that, you know, based on the personnel that's coming in, based on whatever it is that's related to this thought of yours? I kind of bring this up because I've talked about the defensive line in the last few weeks, wrote about it on Sunday, and there were some people who were like, I don't even worry about the defensive line because I worry about the linebackers. And I just thought, huh, interesting. Not saying you can't worry about more than one thing at the same time. I was curious at where people were placing their number one emphasis of concern. Is there an area of concern that anybody thinks is just getting overblown, that, you know, by the time September rolls around, October rolls around, this just won't be even on the table as a discussion point the way that it is now based on whatever?
I mean, I can't just say it. I think that I don't share the same, necessarily the same level of concern with the defensive line that you do, but clearly it has to be a concern with so many unproven players there. I think that the people saying that the linebackers are concerned, especially for spring, I mean, how can they not be? You have Deli and you have Jeffrey McCulloch, and, you know, one, I mean, but behind those guys, you have DeGabriel Floyd, who's a, you know, early enrollee. I mean, albeit a five-star stud, you know, early enrollee, but he is still a true freshman.
In a green jersey.
And the same thing with Caleb Johnson, the JUCO transfer. Both those guys are in green jerseys. Behind them, you literally have walk-ons right now. Now, I know that they're going to be getting some help in the summertime with some of the summer enrollees. They're also I don't even know what the hell's up with DeMarco Boyd, whether that guy's going to come back. But and so with DeMarco Boyd, I mean, with just the fact that he is somebody who I could even talk about as someone that Texas could need back, it's that just goes to show that the linebacker position, at least through spring, razor thin. I think also whenever people worry about the secondary, the especially at the cornerback position, saying, what are we doing with Kobe Boyce back there? After Kobe Boyce was the guy that got burned on one out of every 46 snaps that he played last season, just an unacceptable burn rate, allowed a 75% completion percentage when targeted, worst on the team. But, you know, they say that he's made improvements. There are people on the board pissing and moaning about this. Look, the fact of the matter is that by the time summer comes around, that's going to be Anthony Cook. That's going to be Jalen Green. And are they young? Yes. Are they going to take their lumps, much like we saw? I mean, we've seen basically a whole group, player after player at the cornerback position, just kind of take their lumps as they come up. They've all turned out to be okay by the end. I mean, the Holton Hills, the Devontae Davises, the Chris Boys, et cetera. A lot of these guys are guys that learned under fire. I think it's going to be the same thing with Anthony Cook and Jalen Green, but all, both of those guys, higher upside players than any of the ones that I've mentioned thus far. It's just a higher level of prospect. So I think that as we get into summertime, a lot of these concerns will be alleviated, especially at the linebacker and at the cornerback positions. But I think for right now, there's a little bit of reason for hand wringing at linebacker. It really reminds me similar to what it's been at, you know, in previous years at like running back, where you get to the spring game and you look down, and you say, what the hell? We only have like one of these guys healthy. A similar thing could legitimately happen at the linebacker position with the things, with the way things are shaping up right now.
Anybody else want to follow that up?
Along with Alex, you say which one's being overblown, if that was the question. I kind of tend to, if I had to pick one, I go to the secondary. I think those young cornerbacks are immense. I know they're immensely talented. I think they're going to be very good. Like Alex said, they're going to take their lumps. They're young, but didn't Chris Boyd take plenty of lumps over the last couple of years? I mean, even Devontae Davis certainly wasn't flawless. So, you know, I think throwing those two, I guess they'll be their sophomore cornerbacks out there. And I'm like Alex, I'm assuming Jalen Green's going to be one of the guys on the other side. You know, I think those two guys, Green and Cook, have a chance to be really special for Texas in the long run. I mean, they're young, they're inexperienced. There may be, you know, a few growing pains here and there, but boy, athletically, you know, I think those two are as good as anybody at Texas has brought into the program at, in a while, as far as pure cornerback prospects. I think they'll be fine in the secondary. I mean, you got a little bit of issue there with Brandon Jones being out in the spring. Again, young cornerbacks. But overall, I just think that the talent they have stockpiled, Jason Washington, Craig Nivar at the safety and cornerback positions, I'm just not too worried about that position group. Now, the two in front of them, the linebackers and the defensive line, yeah, I mean, that's more of a concern to me. But I think the secondary will be just fine.
I think everybody's got it figured out for the most part. It's linebacker and D-line, and I think the concerns are fair, especially when you look at, you know, just the bodies that are at linebacker in the spring right now. And you know, I'm with Jason, too, on the defensive backs. There's so much talent there that I think that they're going to get it to at least a level similar to what Texas had last season, you know, especially when you factor in Brandon Jones coming back and how loaded that safety group is. I think they'll get enough out of the corners where there's not going to be a drop off in production. But, you know, really it is what it is. It's the D-line and the linebackers. I mean, I think those two spots clearly are the things to fall. And I think if anybody has concerns about the offensive line, I think with the job Herb Hand did last year and then them going out and getting a graduate transfer that can instantly impact that group as an impact starter, I don't think that there should be any concerns with that group right now.
You know, Anwar, it's interesting. With all of the position groups on the team, you know, we could go one by one. And if we were going to say, who's the guy that you know you can hang your hat on? And we go position by position, you know, it's quarterback position. You can hang your hat on Sam, and that's a nice place to be able to hang your hat. If you go running back, probably is a discussion worthy of having at the back end of this potentially, because I think at the moment you would say, well, we hang our hat on Keyonte Ingram. And at times he looked like a guy who was really, really good. And then there were times when he hit the freshman slump. And I don't know what to expect out of him as you give him a heavier workload, which would be anticipated. So maybe there's a question mark there. But I feel like if we go the rest of the positions, you know, wide receiver, you've got Colin Johnson that you can hang your hat on. Even at the tight end position, I think there's a comfort in Cade Brewer being the replacement for you know, the yes, thank you. Out of sight, out of mind. Whew. And if you go to the offensive line, people are going to be like, Sam Cosmi, like gung-ho about it. If you go into the secondary, you can do that with a couple of different guys. When we get to the defensive line and linebacker, and you ask the question, what's the player in that group that is the absolute most bankable, you know, mortgage your house that this guy ends up being not just a serviceable player, but a plus player on a team that has very, very high expectations. Let's start with the defensive line. Who's everybody's no doubt about it banker with that group. The guy that at the end of this season has absolutely has the ability to be the type of all Big 12 player that, that Texas has had the last couple of years, both at defensive end and in the interior.
There's your answer, the silence.
does Joseph Asai count as a defensive lineman?
No, but he would be potentially the guy.
He doesn't really count as a linebacker. He doesn't really count as a linebacker. They don't play in a package that, that utilizes the B-backer. Like they, whenever they play dime, which is what they're going to play a whole ton of, the B-backer was on the field only less than like 40% of the time last season. So it's like whenever I think about banking on the linebackers, it's are you gonna craft the defense? And you know what? I mean, they could. Whenever you have a guy like BJ Foster, who it seems like he's working as sort of that nickel, sort of the big nickel that I predicted that he would end up at, like long before he even ever enrolled at Texas, maybe that's kind of coming to fruition. And maybe they feel, it sure seems like from behind the scenes that Osai is a guy that they feel is it definitely has the versatility to line up outside in an overhang capacity, who can run, who can turn his hips, and who can cover, as well as be able to operate off the edge. That, I mean, we've seen that sort of athleticism out of Joseph Osai. So maybe you could say I hang my hat on Osai, but if you do that, you're going to have to say I think they're going to be playing more true nickel packages next year with a greater frequency than that dime lightning package that we've seen so much under Todd Orlando.
And you within the normal constructions of defensive line and linebacker, he's a tweener. Like, you're not comfortable giving him to a position.
Oh no, I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is,
who gets to claim him? Just give me in your mind the position group that gets to claim Joseph Asai.
What I'm saying is it would of course have to be linebacker because he plays an outside linebacker position, but he's not going to be on the field for the percentage of snaps that any of the others that you would hang your hat on would be.
Gotcha. If we eliminate Osai for the conversation, just for giggles, both with the defensive line and the linebackers, because I think I would answer Osai myself personally. Like, I think he showed enough flashes. There's enough people in the program saying that this guy's going to be the deal. Considering I don't have that ability to do that about a lot of other guys at those positions right now, who is number two? Who's the number two most bankable D-line/linebacker player for this team? Does anybody want to nominate anybody?
Well, I mean, it's too early to say DeGabriel Floyd. The guy hadn't even gone through a contact practice, but I mean, he has that kind of talent. I'll be a fan of Moro Ojomo forever, but again, I mean, we are really having to project here with some of these guys. Keandre Coburn has that kind of talent. He's got his own issues going on, of course, with the kidney issues, but I mean, there are guys that I think have that kind of talent on the roster, but like I said, I'm doing a lot of projecting because some of these guys haven't even really gone through practices, much less shown it on the field in games. Osai did in the bowl game, but even there's a lot of projection with even, him. But I think you'll have guys that will achieve that level of success, all conference level of success. But, you got to put your money where your mouth is at some point and prove it on the field, too. So.
Come on, Anwar. Give me a guy. Give me your bankable guy. You were out way out in front of everybody on Andrew Beck a year ago. You were way more right about that than wrong. He turned out to be a very serviceable. I don't know that he made the tight ends an eight, but he was good. Like, at the end of the year, Andrew Beck was a player leaving the program that I think they would love to have been able to keep around for another year because he did so many of the things that they wanted him to do. I think that some people think Cade Brewer could be an upgrade in that area this year, although he didn't do anything on the field last year. When we look at these two positions, for you, is there an Andrew Beck, somebody that you're willing to go all in on? Is that guy by the end of the year, everybody will recognize him as not just the leader of a position, but a certified badass within the context of his peers in the Big 12?
I mean, this doesn't make for a good podcast, but no, nobody at this moment. I mean, fair enough. Just because I – you know, I got to see a little bit more from that position group. I just got to see a little, and I know you say, well, what did you see from Andrew Beck? But I also got a good vibe from folks about Beck. And so that's why, you know, I was kind of able to put myself out there. Right now, Ketch, there are, I think it leads to your greater point when, especially like Alex wrote about it the other day, and you guys have talked about like, okay, Malcolm Roach versus Charles Omenihue, and you know where that comparison is. It's kind of like there are so many unprovens at this point, and there's so many holes. And you know, you see a little, you say you saw flashes, maybe, but we're talking about a couple of plays. I definitely need to see more before I'm willing to stand on the table for anyone. And even when I sit on the table for Beck, I think that was more towards training camp than anything else.
No, fair enough. Like, no doubt about that. I guess it kind of speaks for itself. But the general point being that when we look at these lines and the linebackers, and I tend to give the benefit of the doubt to linebacker more than the defensive line, and I don't know why, because, Dustin, I've been waiting for Jeffrey McCulloch to be a bad mofo.
Now, you and me now, both.
Now it's his last year, and I thought we would have answered his question 2 years ago. We're still there. So it's probably confirmation bias on my part that I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt. Oh, he'll be fine. You just watch. He'll be a badass this year. Only not because he's done anything, not because he's actually proven that's the kind of player he'll be with really extended action, but because I invented that idea in my head years ago and haven't completely let go of it. And to that point, if Joseph Asai doesn't turn into a star this year, I'll go into next year and the year after that with the seed planted in my head. Once upon a time, I thought that guy would be a star. So until he can no longer be a star because he runs out of eligibility, there will always be a part of me subconsciously that thinks about him in that realm. And Jeffrey McCulloch is that guy for me. It's the guy that I irrationally give the benefit of the doubt to when I won't, with more ration, give it to a guy that maybe has earned the right to be given a little bit more benefit of the doubt. And here I am. Take it all, Jeffrey McCulloch. I expect you to be a big-time player, even though that just has never happened.
Yeah, I'm with you. I feel like I've been waiting for the Jeffrey McCulloch breakout for like 8 years now, just because they don't have many guys on the roster that are like him, that can do the things that he can do with that kind of athleticism and size and things like that. So I guess at this point, if it happens, it's, you know, kind of like found money for Texas, because, you know, here we are deep into his career. And it still hasn't happened yet. I am still, I've, as Alex likes to use the word, truther. I've been a Taquan Graham truther since high school, since I saw him as a sophomore at Temple High School when he was awesome. I can't even remember who it was. Oh, it was, I went to go see Eric Fowler when he was a junior, and then just this defensive end at Temple just kept jumping out at me. I was like, man, this guy's good.
You are the original.
So Taquan, I am the Graham OG truther. Taquan Graham truther, and I'm going to stick my neck out there. He's going to get it done this year. He's going to be a guy that people talk positively about as the spring goes on, and then in the training camp, and people will start to feel a little bit better about the defensive line because of Taquan Graham. So I'm sticking my neck out there for him. I'm a ride or die guy for Taquan Graham.
You are. You are president of the fan club for him. If it ever takes off, nobody could ever claim that they were more Taquan Graham than you were more Taquan Graham, because you've been riding the Taquan Graham train since, what, junior year in high school?
Sophomore year.
Yeah. Like, I like Graham, but yeah, you're definitely the Graham truther. Let's shift directions a little bit. Believe it or not, Dustin, you are going to get a lot of podcast time space coming up in the next couple of minutes as we discuss the NIT and a little baseball, including that affair last night at the Dish, which I guess the bottom line is Texas beats Arkansas. First time they'd won, and I think, was it five or six meetings? First time since the 05 team had won in either a regional or a super regional. So it was nice to get that Razorback off their back. Bob Ballew posted this on Twitter yesterday, and it made it over to Orange Bloods. It was, so Bob Ballew says, received this email on early college football odds today. And it was games in all of September, the big games in September, and the first set of big games in October. LSU at Texas has Texas as a 7-point underdog at this point. And by the way, had all of you guys seen this? Anybody not see it?
No, I did not.
Okay. Yeah, I saw it. I think that's ridiculous. Some of those numbers are ridiculous. But go on, Kitch.
So Oklahoma and Texas on a neutral field. Well, look, man, if they've got LSU as a 7-point favorite on the road in Austin, if I ask you at that point, what do you think Oklahoma and Texas is going to look like based on the fact that they've got LSU as a 7-point favorite? They've got Oklahoma as a 17-point favorite over Texas.
That's insanity.
It is absolute insanity. We usually
what
say
what sports book was like, this?
That's the thing. It doesn't say what sports book it comes from.
I can explain where these numbers come from.
I would
from,
bet
keep
my
going.
House on the plus 17 if that's the case. I mean, that's ridiculous.
It could be the worst Texas team in history or the worst Oklahoma team in history. And if you gave me 17 points on either side, I'd always take the 17. It's a game that doesn't always play like that.
Charlie Strong beat Oklahoma.
And they're probably like they were, 14
they were,
dogs.
They were like one when they had like one win before that, and they finished like, after the game's like 2-4. He's crowd surfing and everything, and strutting into the press conference like George Jefferson, like he did something. It's like I told you guys, huh? I'm just like pointing to reporters, like come on.
So, I mean, I don't even know what to do with that, but just well, I wanted here's, some reaction.
Here's where it comes from is. A lot of times when they're using these algorithms and things like that that are coming up with these spreads, like you can go and look at Football Outsiders as kind of projected efficiency numbers or overall team ranks or whatever you want to call it. When they use these methods to come up with these spreads and things like that, I believe, and I know for Football Outsiders this is true, when they come up with their rankings, which are pretty close to Vegas lines, if you kind of compare the two teams when they play and things like that. The problem is they factor a lot of past experience into these numbers, I think. So we're talking about, you know, they're looking at not just Texas last season and not really projecting as much what Texas has moving forward. They're basing a lot of this on, you know, the past 3, 4, maybe even 5 seasons. I think Football Outsiders goes back 4 or 5 seasons when they're compiling their numbers just based on like, here's past history, how it factors into the equation and then come up with a projection moving forward. So I think that's why you get some of these really strange numbers right now is if you're factoring in Texas past experience, as Anwar said, you're factoring in Charlie Strong team still at this point because Tom Herman's only been at Texas 2 seasons and he had a 7-6 team before the team last year that won 10 games. So I think that's where some of that comes from, and then it spits out these overall teams based on like efficiency and play-by-play data and you know all these things over years of data as opposed to just one singular year. I would be totally stunned if we get to that LSU game and the number is that large, and then especially if they get to the Oklahoma game and if it's anything like that. I mean, 17 is just absolutely nuts. I don't care how good Oklahoma is. I don't care how good Texas is. If that number stays 17, take Texas and take it to the bank. But LSU, for example, over the last 4 or 5 seasons, Vegas has always loved them. The analytics have always loved them. So they've got this past track record of being a strong team analytically. So that's going to bump their rating way up as it relates to Vegas. So I think that that's going to spit out some really, really weird numbers right now. And why you have these totally absurd lines. But if you're a Texas fan, you want Texas to be the biggest underdog possible heading into that LSU game and heading into that Oklahoma game. Because we know against the spread, when Tom Herman's an underdog, he has a lot of success. I mean, just look most recently at what Texas did in the Sugar Bowl against Georgia.
Alex, what in your mind? Because I don't know that I'd figured out what I thought that the point spread for Texas and LSU would look. It's week 2, so you know, whatever it ends up being will probably be what it is consistently being over the course of the last couple of months leading into that. Like, I don't know that week 1 would change much, and unless there's a quarterback injury or something like that. I have always in my mind envisioned that as a game where Texas would be at least a slight favorite. seeing that makes me think that Texas will go into that second week showdown as an underdog.
Well, I'm just trying to – I'm, like, looking online trying to see where I can find these lines. I want to bet them right now. I'm just – like, I've been looking. I can't find it on Sportsbook or BetDSI, but I'll continue to look. Yes, man, it's just way too much. I mean, you look over – let's just look over the depth chart at LSU. It's not like – Joe Burrow, I guess. That's the transfer quarterback, right? That they were able to get this year. But I mean, Terrence Marshall, he was a good player coming out, but that's a freshman. Justin Jefferson, Jonathan Giles, these guys are young too. Sophomores, freshmen, and juniors at their key skill positions. The running back, you have a sophomore, and then you have Leonard Fournette's little brother at the running backs. You've lost Nick Brossette, you've lost Foster Moreau. So I mean, I don't know, man. I mean, at your linebacker, you lose Devin White. It doesn't make any sense to me. And that 17 too, man. That 17 points to OU. That's the one that I really wanted. You're telling me that everybody thinks that Jalen Hurts is going to come in and transform that team. Whatever, Jalen Hurts is nowhere near as good as Baker Mayfield or Kyler Murray, right?
Yeah, no offense.
Well, I mean, he
could still be really, really good.
Yeah,
and the other two guys could be two of the top five passing quarterbacks of their era.
Right. I don't get. I mean, you lose Hollywood Brown. You lose literally every single Oklahoma, every single offensive lineman across that. You know, whatever the Remington Award winning offensive line, except for the very, very awesome and talented center, Creed, I believe it's Creed Humphrey. That guy is a beast. That guy's a beast. Texas fans are Texas fans are gonna have to deal with that dude for the next, you know, I guess two more years before he goes pro. He'll be a dude who goes pro after the 3 years. But I mean, you replaced the whole offensive line. You replaced the quarterback. I mean, they didn't have Rodney Anderson for a whole lot of last year, but boy, when that guy was healthy, watch back his film versus Texas. That guy's a beast. You lose Hollywood. I mean, how are we talking about OU as a 17 point favorite? Like, to me, that sounds like a joke. I'm looking for the line because, yeah, I mean, it's something that I'll definitely get in on good and early, even though I hate tying up my money for, you know, 6 months in a bet like that. It's just that thing's going to – I'm serious. That thing's going to come down. The LSU one's going to come down. Ketch, you said that you fixed your Texas being a slight favorite. It's almost like I predicted too. I guarantee you by the time we get to the weekend of the LSU game, if LSU is a favorite, that game's at LSU, right, to start, or is it home? It's at home?
Austin. Yeah.
That game should be Texas by a field goal.
That's what I was thinking.
You'll never find those lines where they're actually bettable. That's the bottom line. When those lines come out, truly come out at the sports books and your local sports books or whatever your local.
At worst, it should be a pick 'em.
Yeah, I mean, they'll be nowhere near those lines. Those are ludicrous.
I just don't get where they come from. I'm looking for a substance in place where I can actually, if those lines are true, where I can.
Let me know if you find it, Alex.
Right.
I'll be right there with you, brother. Okay.
God help us if it goes sideways. Everybody,
that'll be a whole other podcast.
No, I don't even want to jinx it.
Yeah. That'd be the GoFundMe podcast for the Orange Bloods crew as we try to raise money to pay our mortgages.
That we thought we're going to get paid through a bet that didn't go through for us. Changing topics. Basketball. Dustin. Texas has a second NIT game coming to the Irwin Center on Sunday.
Sunday fun day, baby.
Oh, I know that made your weekend.
By made, you mean ruined.
Yes, no, exactly. By made, I mean fuck that. Will more than 500 fans show up? I guess not that number, because 1,700 showed up. Will more than 4,000 fans show up with a game now, you know.
Oh, 4,000? No way.
I mean, still no students, I guess.
Yeah, no. I mean, even if the students were here, like,
they wouldn't go to that game anyway.
No,
turned off this podcast because you've even brought up the NIT.
Oh, no, they haven't. Not. Look at the board.
They're listening. You don't understand these people if you think they're turning it off right as we're getting.
Everybody likes to look at a car crash when they drive by. You're
probably right.
The traffic doesn't speed up when there's a wreck. It's funny because somebody brought up all-time worst moments in the history of the site earlier this week. And look, the Red Banquet is the new marker. God help us if it ever gets replaced. It seems like that would be it'd be the worst day of my life, all of our lives, if anything could ever touch the Red Banquet. Before that, it was very early in our existence. I've always circled the post 2003 Washington State game because Mac was in, I think, 4 years deep into getting his ass kicked by Oklahoma. And I think they'd gotten their ass in 2003, had really gotten their ass kicked by Oklahoma. That was the game that lost them Adrian Peterson, essentially. I was in the student athlete section with the parents during the Washington State game. And I have never, ever, 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 ever seen a Texas game. I mean, to give you an idea of how bad it was on the message board, and even though we were still a young message board at the time, there were still thousands of people who had migrated their way to the board by 2003. It was crazier in the parents section. Parents yelling at each other about whose kids should and shouldn't be on the field and the way the coaching it was the ugliest scene I've personally ever witnessed involving like Texas football people, parents, that kind of a thing. And the message board wasn't much better. And I'll never forget walking out of the stadium that night with Sean Adams. And I stepped wrong off of a curb and I badly sprained my ankle. Like that just sucked. So that for me has always stood the test of time as one of the worst low moments of Orange Bloods. You could bring up the Kansas game and some of these other ones, but like those were true signature moments. Sunday or Tuesday night's game and the apathy of anybody taking a picture of what the Irwin Center looked like at tip off or whenever, and the lack of people in the stands, the way the people are just like, this is in the future when people talk about the Texas basketball program and they ask me the low of the low for Dustin. I'm asking you, Dustin, because I think this is my answer. I think I'm going to point to this NIT game, how few people showed up to it, and the general reaction to all of it as kind of a new point for Texas basketball. If I'm wrong, mention the moment.
I still go back to when they lost at home to VCU earlier this year, and I'll just never forget sitting down in the media room waiting on all the post-game stuff. And you could hear VCU fans 20, 25, 30 minutes after the game making a ton of noise still in the stadium. I mean, they drowned out Texas fans during the game. They had as many fans there as Texas did. They beat Texas on the court. It was, you know, and VCU turned out to be a good team. I mean, heck, they're an at-large team in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, they're
in. But it's just more of the visual of that's the program Shaka Smart left. They just came to Austin, outplayed his team, did a lot of the things that he talks about and won the game on the road. And their fans are here just celebrating. You can hear it in the press room. That to me was the low point because where that came with the Radford loss as well. It was shortly after Texas had beaten North Carolina in Las Vegas, and everybody was starting to get back in on Texas basketball again. They were ranked before the Radford game number 17 in the country. It was the highest ranking a Shaka team has ever had at Texas. And then just that Radford loss followed by that VCU loss and just what you could hear and what you could see during that game, I think is the low point. That two-game stretch between those two teams. And again, VCU is a good team. But that two home game stretch where they lost to Radford and VCU, games that they should have won, and just the visual of those games and what you could hear and what you could see and things like that, that to me will always be the low point, because if you go back to those games and Texas wins those games, they're not in the NIT. The NIT doesn't happen if they win both of those games. And heck, maybe if they only win one of those games, they would have gotten into the NCAA tournament because they wouldn't have been a 500 team on Selection Sunday. So the NIT deal, like if they would have blown the game against South Dakota State after they started on a 19-0 run, oh yeah, it would have replaced for me Radford and VCU as the low points, because it totally played out as a here we go again moment. Texas builds the big lead. You knew South Dakota State was going to come all the way back. And then give credit to Texas, especially Osakowski and Ramey, the way they played down the stretch, for just making some plays and winning that game. So the fact that they won that game, that to me doesn't surpass the lows of what Radford and VCU were. But yeah, it's weird because, you know, the NIT has, I don't think there's as much anger as there is Texas fans like joking and mocking the fact that their team is in the NIT tournament. It's like, you know, it's turned into a joke for a lot of Texas fans. Like, hey, you know, we're going to hang that banner, that NIT banner. Here we go. You know, just kind of mocking the situation. Whereas that Radford and VCU, those losses, there was just pure anger. You know, and I can remember even the Providence loss. There were fans in the stands, because it was a pretty good turnout. There were fans in the stands where I was sitting screaming at Shaka Smart. So back then, there was still a lot of anger. Now you've got more of a apathetic, mocking tone with this basketball program right now, which some could argue that that's worse than the anger. But I still think the Radford and VCU losses, just the way that played out visually and what you could hear after the VCU game, those were the low points for this program.
You make your job sound so enticing right now.
I'm telling you, hey, I posted the Michael Scott picture, the GIF in the thread last night when I think it was the fire drill episode where he goes, oh God, it's happening. Norfolk State upset Alabama last night. Alabama was the number one seed in Texas side. Texas can host all their games before Madison Square Garden. Get ready. The New York train is rolling.
Oh my God. Like I made that post in my 10 thoughts from the weekend, which was, how the hell does everybody, because like you said, to say that the fan base is apathetic towards the NIT in general is an understatement. I think that there will be a segment of people that want Texas to lose before they can get to New York. That we could pitch this idea that winning the NIT wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. Like, it's something. It's something. It's better than nothing. And I think that there are some Texas fans that would be like, I prefer nothing if that's the something. This thing, I don't know if they beat, what do they got, Xavier next? That yes. always,
That
just feels like the kind of team that will end Texas' season. That being said, like, they're playing at home. Texas has beaten better teams than Xavier at home this year, even when they've had parts missing at times. So the morbid curiosity wants me to see Texas make it to New York, because I think people would lose their shit in trying to process Texas winning the NIT.
Oh yeah. It would be a total, it would screw everybody's mind up. Like, how do you process Texas going to New York at Madison Square Garden and cutting down the nets after the NIT title? Like, how would people handle just that image?
Shaka Smart's on top of a ladder.
Chris Del Conte's probably out there grinning on the floor. Like, you know, I think that would make a lot of Texas fans heads explode, because it's like, what? Like, you know, here they are like celebrating a championship on national television after being a 500 team. Like, I think that, you know, part of me wants that to happen just so Texas fans would be forced to react to that image, because I think it would make so many heads explode.
Hey, can you imagine our long
catch?
Yes.
The best post I saw was from on our board was a guy, Hornified, who said it's the NIT. It's an irrelevant tournament. Even if you win, you're still only the 69th best team in the country.
Yeah, but they'll hang a banner.
There will be a banner.
Would they hang a banner? Not for the NIT champion.
Oh, yeah. Yes. I'm pretty confident there are NIT banners in the Irwin Center.
The most, to me, the biggest standout banner that has ever hung from the University of Texas. As someone who's been going to games since I was 10 years old at the Irwin Center, when Penders first started going, maybe I was like 11 or 12 when Penders really started, had it going in 88, 89. Like that NIT banner, the 77 NIT? 77, 78?
76, I think, or something like that. But yeah, it's around like, that time period.
Like it sticks out like a sore thumb.
Hey, Ken. Hangs. I got lunch. I got lunch on me if you can name me an NIT champion over the past 10 years.
Oh, TCU won it recently.
So I said catch. I said catch.
Let's go with TCU.
All right, catch. Now that he's eliminated TCU and Baylor, I'll stretch it out to the last 12 years. Give me an NIT champion.
Well, I know.
Did Providence win it once? Or am I crazy? I don't know.
Why are you answering for me?
Oh, sorry. Does anyone know what their name is?
Lunch, and you guys are like fucking it up for me.
I'm just throwing out random schools at this point.
You're throwing out Big East schools, like whatever ones might
feel like. They feel like a team that probably was in the NIT might have done pretty well. I don't know.
Do I get multiple? I have one in my head that I'm sure is wrong. Do I only get one guess, or do I get multiple guesses?
As many as it takes.
You have a list in front of you on one.
The NIT under Fake Face. Baylor won it.
You can't use Baylor. Dustin already gave you that one.
I don't think he heard me, but yeah.
I thought Dustin said TCU.
He also said TCU Baylor. TCU and Baylor. He said TCU and Baylor. So that's why I stretched it out for 12 years.
Katz is probably Googling it right now. Okay.
No,
rapid fire answer.
I'm close to doing that. Believe me, if I'd already Googled,
I just did. Hey, I'll send you a DM, Ketch, and we'll split.
I wanted to say Michigan won it, but I want to say Michigan won it a long time ago, and that can't. Like, I feel like my statute of limitations is limited to a year. I remember Michigan winning it because I think they did something in the NCAA tournament the next year, and then it was then used as the example of, see, there's some value in winning the NIT, and then is Michigan in the last 10 years? Is that
2004? 2004 was Michigan.
Oh, I was close. We were only having this conversation when I hired you instead of like, you know, all these years later, I'd have been in
2004. That not too
far. Come on, Ketch. You got to have some guesses, man. There's been some bigger names that have won this.
Yeah, one team actually won it twice.
I think Stanford has won it.
2012.
You got a free
and 2015.
Sweet. Yeah, right.
Yes.
So who are the other teams? Let me tell, if you're looking at a list, give me the other teams and see if I could have ever figured that out.
Okay, 2018 was Penn State, 17 was TCU, 16 was George Washington versus Valparaiso. You missed that one. Oh, God,
no way I would have ever said that.
Stanford in 15, Minnesota in 14, Baylor, Stanford, Wichita State, Dayton, Penn State. I'll just give you a couple more. Ohio State, West Virginia, and South Carolina won it in back-to-back years, 2005 and 2006.
Boy, that doesn't do a whole lot for me. I'm glad. I wasn't able to use Baylor and TCU, but thank goodness there were a couple of Big 12 teams in there. There's the only reason why that stood out to me. I knew Baylor had won it because I remember like Pierre Jackson, I think, if I remember correctly, was on that team. He was on the Sixers for about 5 minutes. I remember being excited that Pierre Jackson was on the Sixers, in part because I remember watching him in the NIT.
But yeah, like years ago, it meant something. Like years ago, it was kind of cool, Dan. I tell you, it was kind of a cool thing that we would all watch, you know, so I'm in the garden, this and that, and then kind of spread it out. And it's just kind of like.
Well, because when the NCAA tournament was limited to 32 teams, you had to win your conference to get in the tournament.
Yeah,
so when Texas won it in 1978, it was still a big deal because you could make cases that there were a number of teams that were in the NIT that were much, much, much better than the teams that were in the NCAA tournament, yeah, which was a bit of a watered down field. So you had I just now pulled it up and I
think Reggie Miller won an MVP when UCLA won in 85.
Well, Ralph Sampson won one at Virginia. And let's see who else is on here. I'm looking at the, I think Indiana won it the year before they won the national championship with Isaiah Thomas they won it in 79. Maybe Zeke was in 81.
Hey, Dustin. So I'm looking at this bracket. So if Texas wins tonight, they'll probably play, just looking at the seeding, Alabama. Would that
Alabama lost.
Oh, yeah, I thought it was North. Okay, so Colorado. Where would that game?
They would. Texas would host all the games.
They would, okay.
Yeah, because they'd be the higher seed. Yeah, okay. All the way up until the semifinals and the finals are in Madison Square Garden.
This team has to make the NIT semifinals in New York. Has to.
They're the two seed. They'll be playing a three seed and a four seed.
They will be favored in every game until New York. And probably if they get to New York, they'd be favored in the first game there too.
That sounds so dangerous.
it wouldn't be the first time they've been a favorite and lost the game.
Yeah, it could be a TCU-Texas matchup in New York. That'd be interesting.
Ooh. So
better than the last.
Then it would sell out. All right, I know everybody's got commitments we got to get to. We needed to keep this one an hour-ish. Let's jump into parting shots. Anybody want to go first?
What the hell, I'll jump in. I've got I touched on it on my Something's Brewing podcast last night. Like I said, a hell of a camp this weekend in Dallas. It'll be my final camp of this kind of month and a half long camp circuit. So I'm kind of excited about that aspect of it. But then we'll get into the national camps with the Rivals Five-Star Challenge and maybe the opening if I actually get credentialed to that. We'll see. But regardless, camp this weekend, we should have a lot of recruiting coverage. Pretty quiet week. I mean, just like the football team, there's not a lot of recruiting action this week. But last week, we didn't talk about it. After we recorded our podcast last week on Thursday, Friday was a pretty big day for Texas. They had a lot of recruits on campus. A couple offensive line commitments were there. The Brockermeyer brothers were there. Keely Ringo stayed all the way until Saturday. That dude came in like Monday, I think, and stayed in Austin until Saturday. This is the five-star corner out of Arizona. So I think Texas looks really, really good there. I actually mentioned Akili. He's always told me, hey, I'm going to take my time with this process. And I said, are you still thinking that, dude? Or is there a chance you might commit early now? And this is your third trip to Austin. He goes, well, he goes, this is while he was still in his Texas visit. He said, never say never on an early commitment. So if he's committing early, it's going to be Texas. Now, I still think he'll take his time with this. But the fact that he's even got it in his mind that, okay, hey, maybe I won't take this thing out till signing day as I originally planned, that's a pretty good sign for Texas. Chris Thompson, the Duncanville safety, was there. I talked to his dad this week. It was in my 3-2-1 column. Great visit overall. Jaquindon Jackson. So spring break, been quiet. The days leading up to spring break was pretty productive for Texas. I think they made a very strong impression on everybody that was on campus from the guys I've talked to. And I'll see some of those guys, including Jaquindon Jackson and Chris Thompson, on Sunday at the Rivals camp. So I'll really pepper them with Texas questions at that event. So like the football team, recruiting should start picking back up. You know what? Official visits can start first week of April, man. So I don't know of any yet that Texas has on the calendar, but man, those suckers are right around the corner too. So we'll start seeing official visitors before we know it too. So.
Real quick, anything from last year, that first year where the calendar changed, any, I don't know, expert tips you picked out on how you need to prepare yourself for the weeks that come where guys could show up on campus and be, you're basically like a doctor on call.
It really is. It's fucking annoying. I got to admit, it does make, January.
Don't you make any plans?
January of last year was just a cakewalk though, because there just wasn't much to cover for February signing day. You and I talked about it, Ketch, like the night before or maybe the morning of. We're like, this is boring. Like, what do we do today? No, just like you said, keep my weekends open. They'll have maybe three weekends where the coaches will select for official visit weekends. I think one of them, I scheduled a vacation 6 months ago. I think one of them will be, luckily, if my vacation works, where I'll be back in time for what should be their April official visit weekend for the Jambalaya Festival or something. They sandwich that around. So, it's hectic, but that part of it kind of sucks. And I know you know, for the coaches or like that early signing period, man, they're trying to get bowl preparations and this, that, and the other, and guys are taking finals. Overall, I think early recruiting has been a, I wouldn't call it a grand slam. It's been a home run, but not necessarily a grand slam. I do think there are some tweaks with the timing that the NCAA could do, but overall, I'm still just strongly in favor of it. But you're right. Hey, April, May, and June, it's kind of like you got to be really selective if you're going to, you know, take a day to go see a family member or something. You better make sure there's nothing going on recruiting those 3 months, which is new for me. It used to be April and May for me were the 2 months where I could schedule a vacation and have nothing to be worried about because those were the two slowest months in recruiting. Not the case anymore. And frankly, I don't know when the slowest month in recruiting is now because there's never an end to it.
I just remember Jimmy Sutton back in 2003. I think it was the 4th of July that he committed on. So I remember talking to you on the phone and we were both out doing something. And I had my boat on Lake Travis with guests. And it was determined that I was the person most easily able to get to a computer to cover his commitment.
Where the hell would I have been if you were on a boat?
I don't know, but it's what happened. I kicked all the people off my boat, drove back to the marina, went and ran a commitment story, came back to the boat, jumped back on the lake, and tried to finish the day.
At some point, I just want to say, you know what? F you, kid. It's 4th of July. Damn it.
You're coming out of the blue. He didn't sign with Texas.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Went to NC State. So in the end, a 2-sentence
commitment story. That's it, dude.
He ruined my 4th of July, and he didn't even sign with Texas. Instead, he's a mere footnote in history. I think he was a decent little player at NC State. Anwar, closing shot, parting shot. What do you got?
So yeah, moved. I got a catch. I owe Spectrum, Time Warner, and I don't want to say an apology because I thought the internet sucked before, but I actually had to get it now. And props to Time Warner Spectrum. They had this upgraded internet package here, and this thing is like blazing fast. Like I did the this whole thing with Ross yesterday, and he's like, "Man, you are cooking with grease." So I'm actually happy to be a Time Warner Spectrum cable guy person again. And you know, it's funny. The only other thing I'll say is, you know, every couple has certain things that they look back for their anniversaries. And yesterday I was talking to my wife. I was like, "Hey, you know, babe, the NCAA tournament starts tomorrow." And she says, "Wow, has it been a year already?" And what she was referring to was my vasectomy. Like because I got it right at the end start of the NCAA tournament and sat for a few days with a bag of peas on the privates. And it was like we reflected back on that day where we realized and gladly understood that we would never have kids again because we don't want to do this shit ever, 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 ever again. And we were proud. We were happy. It was a moment. And so, yes, March Madness for me will always be the time where I realized that, let me clean it up. I'll save the dirty versions for my podcast, that we won't have kids anymore.
Good job. Interesting parting shot. Literally, it was a parting shot for you.
With blanks now, though. They're blanks now.
I dare to ask you this. Alex, you're up. Give me
I don't really have anything to rant about. Well, I'm going to the zoo tomorrow with my – I'm taking, like, those I guess some semblance of a –
zoo animals.
So I'm taking a spring break trip with my wife and two kids to go to the zoo. My daughter's been talking about going to the San Antonio Zoo. So she's been getting excited about going to do that. So tomorrow will be a little bit out of pocket taking the family to go do that. I'm trying to think things I can complain. You know, one thing I can complain about this week is the live oak trees. Since when has there been a tree that sheds its leaves in springtime? It's like I thought once they kind of shed their leaves and you kind of take care of that stuff at the end of fall, and springtime is when you do some work. I have the deal. All right, so these leaves, they keep falling all over the place because I have who knows how many, probably 300 live oak trees out here, and there's a big grove of them over by where my like pool area is, right? And inside these two planters, that each have like a little kind of grove of oak trees in them. Like the oak trees right now are just shitting out these leaves into my goddamn pool, right? And not only that, they were getting caught up in these little planters underneath them where they're just kind of, it's hard to explain, but they're like kind of, my yard goes down and it's like terraced because it's like up on a bluff that goes down into like a little wet weather creek. And so it's like my yard is sort of on levels, right? And so in between levels, there are these little boxes that are like planters that where the different trees were preserved by the person whoever backfilled the land and created the terracing, if that makes any sense. And so inside those planters, it was just a messy, weedy, like horrible mess of all this stuff to where I couldn't take my leaf blower out there and even blow out the leaves so they wouldn't keep whipping into my damn pool every day to where I had to clean it literally sometimes two times a day these last couple of weeks. So what I decided to do was go in there, pull out all the damn weeds, put down weed blocker, and then go and fill it up with some like decomposed granite, right? Whenever I did this, do you know this scam they try and pull over at the rock quarry? With somebody like me that just needs to go in there with like 10 5-gallon buckets and just fill those up for each planter, they charge you $9.85 per bucket, right? But if they want it, but if let's say I get like 5 buckets, it's like, you know, $45. But if you get it in a wheelbarrow and you fill up your whole wheelbarrow, it's only $21. And so I kept trying to explain to this dude. I'm like, I don't have a wheelbarrow. I can't fit into the back of my Honda CRV. Like I, but why can't you just charge me for like a quarter yard? Because that's the same thing as a wheelbarrow. And I can put these 4.5 buckets into there, right? Like 4.5 buckets or so fits into a wheelbarrow. You charge me then that whatever it is, the $16 for that. And let's just use that as a measure, as opposed to saying I have to bring in a wheelbarrow that I can't even fit it up into the back of my goddamn car because all I have is the back of an SUV. I can fill up the buckets. It's the exact same thing. Why is it charged so much more to fill up the buckets? And this dude, neither him nor his manager would come off this thing that if you put it in buckets – It's literally, I'm like, are you kidding me? We can look up the number of it's 201.87 cubic gallons in one cubic yard. Why can't we just say these are 5-gallon buckets? That's 30 gallons of this. Why can't we not convert it to what it is for a yard and do it like that? And they say, no, the rule's always been it's this much for a bucket. It's this much for a wheelbarrow. It's this much for a yard if you have your own truck. It's like all this shit. I'm having to go shovel it out myself. It isn't like when I'm the bucket customer, I'm the guy that comes in that requires extra stuff. No, I set out the buckets. I take my own shovel. I take my own gloves. I shovel the decomposed pink Fairlane granite right into the buckets, lift those damn buckets up into the back of my car. What's the difference? Like, why? Like, you're literally charging for an amount of a material. There's no extra labor that goes into the fact that I'm taking it by this. There's no extra. There isn't even the fact that, like, no, we can't even sell amounts that small. And if we sell them that small, we need to charge more for them because the fact of the matter is, I'm buying a semi amount of bulk. It's just that I'm having to do it by more and more buckets. I've had to go back there twice to get this thing refilled for each planter. Now I'm done with the project, but I just charged an extra $140. Over the course of my two times going there, more than anybody else, because the only thing I had to transport this granite was in buckets. So my suggestion is for anybody that needs to go get bulk decomposed granite or bulk anything like that, make sure you have a friend. Just call your friend up who has a goddamn truck and put it in there, because that way you can't get swindled.
Well, first off, Alex, I'm glad I sold my truck so you don't call me. Secondly, you said you paid an extra, you know, it should have done, dude, $120. Rent one of those damn trucks for Home Depot for $30. Buy yourself a wheelbarrow. You probably still save money, and then you have a wheelbarrow for future.
Why should I have to do that? Like,
I'm just saying. I see your point, but if you would have saved money and you had a wheelbarrow, you could have used tall shit around your yard, push your kids around. Hell, fuck! I got a wheelbarrow you can borrow.
Hopefully, there is no next time carrying all these.
I just think that's the most first world problem that we've had.
Yes, yes. Leaves in his pool and shit. I'm like, oh, my.
Do you clean your own pool?
Oh, yeah, dude. Do you think I'm going to pay some dude? That's another, like, they, I mean, can I pay somebody $120 a month to come out here once?
Yeah.
once a week and clean my pool. Fuck no.
I have people who come and get my dog shit out of my yard. Yes, you can get someone who'll come by and clean your pool for you. They're called pool boys. Dude, Taylor Ham is looking for jobs.
I would never let that guy anywhere near my house. Plus, man, there's something to be said for getting out and doing a little bit of this work. There's also something to be said for the fact that, like, Jesus Christ, I don't have enough money to give somebody $100 a month to do this for me.
Not after paying the prices that you just paid.
Yeah, I just paid $240 for rocks.
Yeah,
your kids are too young, but you'll love it when they get a little older. Like, that was always my thing with my kids when they got in trouble. That's it. You're scooping poop. So we don't have dogs anymore. But I remember, like, a week after we put our last one to sleep, my daughter was acting up, and I said, "That's it. You're scooping poop." When we get home, she goes, "Dad, we don't have dogs anymore." Oh yeah, I'll have to find another. So now they clean toilets.
Now you send them to the next door neighbor's house with dogs.
I should.
I'm going to be your best friend.
I literally said, when she said that, it just came out. I said, "You know what? I will find somebody who has a dog." Then yes, but no. Now I make them act up. I'm like, "That's it. You're cleaning toilets." So.
Anybody else, or is it me?
I haven't gone, but I've got nothing. You go for it.
I just wanted to say, let all of our listeners know, as part of the Yak, you guys have been listening to this Ticket City podcast over at the Yak as a host for months now. The app is officially live. You can go to your Apple store, type in the Yak, download the app. It's very slick. I'm a big fan of it. It has all the whistles and bells that I think you would want in an app, and we're very proud of it. And it is the next step of progression for us as a network. We actually have a number of shows getting ready to launch in the coming weeks, and we've had so much positive movement on that front that we're actually ahead of schedule in terms of when we want to start dropping new franchises, new cities to work on, Dallas and Houston, LA, those types of markets around the corner. So if you are a member of the Yak, all of that content beyond what we've already provided you that was promised is on the way. Exciting days, exciting times with this little company that we are working with. And we seem to have some real momentum, and nothing could top the fact that the actual Apple app Apple has approved it. And so now you can do the thing with the Yak app that you do with all of your other Yak apps. And we'll go from there. So check it out, download it, go get it. It's free. And for Justin, who doesn't really have a parting shot, but did have to talk about the basketball team extensively, which seems like a parting shot if I've ever heard one, for Jason, for Alex and his first world problems, and for Anwar, who's settling into his new home this week. Just kind of chilling. Nothing wrong with that. It's a little peaceful. Kids are still away, right, Anwar?
Yes, they are still away. They come back this weekend. So,
oh, you've got days left, like two.
Yeah, but we still got a baby though. So
it's still that. Just a baby's different than like the household, right? Like,
yeah, but the kids are self sufficient though. I mean, they can go into the kitchen and get stuff and go. You can yell at them and go out to play. Like, you can't really do much with a baby. It's a little bit worse.
I can't just put the baby in the closet and a couple hours later. Anyway, for everybody and all of their issues, thank you for listening. We'll do this bad boy again next week. Until then, you guys be good to each other. And make sure to go check out Ticket City, TicketCity.com, 1-800-SOLD-OUT, or just find them in your DMs on the website. They will take care of you later.